Moncrief on News Talk.
Even though the game of hurling is nowadays highly regulated, things can occasionally go wrong. Mistakes can be made about the score, for instance, and people can get understandably het up about it. But hurling predates the GAA and all those rules. The former Wexford hurling captain, Diarmaid Ling, has embraced what he calls wild hurling. Diarmaid, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
So could you describe what wild hurling is? What happens in a game of it?
Well, in some respects, it's much more tame than whatever we want to call it, proper hurling. But it's very much an invite to people who aren't part of GAA clubs, who, well, they still can be and they still can be playing the game. But it's a way of playing the game, a conditioned game, hand passing, possession, striking, American football style end zones, where you're trying to get the ball into the end zone as opposed to trying to get it through the posts. But it's more, I suppose, the philosophy behind it is that it's not really about the person who gets the ball in the end zone and who gets the score or gets the winning score or whatever. It's much more about trying to create conditions where everybody who's playing gets to actually learn something and gets to improve their skills and gets to build some kind of relationship with this game that, you know, I see it, John. I see it when people, no matter what their background is, no matter what their interest is, when they connect with the ball perfectly and it flows off the hurl as though you can't even feel that you've hit it. It's the same joyous reaction in everybody that I've worked with. And so I'm trying to create those conditions for people to have that experience, because I think this game is a much wider experience than the hurling that we know in the GAA context.
Yeah, and the traditional GAA type hurling, is that turning a certain amount of people off for some reason?
I would say so. Like, I've met a considerable amount of people, definitely in the creative community, but also people who were just very, very into it. But something happened along the way. There was some kind of falling out. They weren't as welcome in the dressing room. Maybe they wore red pants into the dressing room one day and the Wrangler and, check shirt brigade weren't particularly impressed with it. Or they couldn't find their way into it. Or maybe they didn't want to kill the fella up the road in the same way that we kind of, this is the kind of competition that we often kind of put on young people in that context, and they've loved the game, but they couldn't find their way in the organization or in the dressing room. And so they've just been floating around, I think, for the last, you know, however long, and until they come in touch with maybe somebody who's putting forward the game in a very different way and who's saying, look, we can change the rules. It doesn't have to be the same rules for Sean Moncrief, who's picking up a hurl for the first day in his life, against me, who's playing for 40 years. He's allowed to make a few mistakes, and we just move with it and let it be dynamic and let it live and let yourself get the connection with it, as opposed to being confined too much to the rules of what you can and can't do all the time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's been, and like, you know, I feel, Sean, as well, it's like, you know, 15-year-olds, 50-year-olds, we've had 77-year-olds playing. We had lovely, the owner of Jim of the Mills down in Prairie, who played in goal for us last year, and he was as skillful and as fine a player as anyone we ever had. And it's just that mix, it's the mixing of the sexes, it's the mixing of the ages, it's the young people and the old people, and they're able to actually create the conditions where they can all get a little bit. And I just think that's the essence of the game as well, you know. It's not that there's anything wrong with the other game, that's doing its thing, that's fine, but we do have to let the other side of it breathe too, you know?
Yeah. So this is playing it for the joy of it rather than it necessarily you're being in a league or any of that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I reached a level with the game. I'm really, really grateful that I got to reach that level with the game. Some form of, like, you know, whatever they call it, mastery came into my bones at some point in my life. And what happens when you have that is it's very simple for me now to be able to break the game down into digestible chunks for people. You pre-teach a few little skills, give them, build the confidence with them, and then let them off into a game setting. And they're really, they start, like, the competitive edge, and it's lovely to see it as well. You see the competitive edge, and I'm always pushing it as well. I'm like, you know, first to three at the end or whatever it is. I believe winning is fine. Competition is fine. Excessive focus on competition, people's own trauma coming out in competition, that's where I draw the line and say, no, we're going to hold the game up. We're going to have a look at this. That's not acceptable here, because you're going in too hard on somebody who's not able for it. And it's only because of your excesses, your failed dreams to play in Croke Park or whatever it is. We don't really care what it is, but it's not welcome, because we have to be able to play. It's still competitive. It's still fierce. There's still physicality. There's still all of that still alive. That's the game of hurling. But those excesses, that's where it gets a little bit more troublesome for people. And I think people fall out with the game, you know.
Yeah, and when you say bringing their traumas into the games, what do you mean by that? What kinds of
sure.
traumas?
I mean, God, Sean, you'd only have to go to any sports club or any discipline, I suppose, really, probably in the country. And I accept that there are excesses required for excellence. But when you see people losing the run of themselves, shouting at children, or when you see people playing a game who they don't care what damage they're doing around them, they're just focused on their own experience and their own thing. In my mind, as I'm looking at them, I can see that's they're no longer plugged into what's happening all around. They're no longer responding to the game. They're no longer with people in the joy of it. They're in their own process. And if there's darkness, damage, whatever in that, that comes out. And we see that. And like, I mean, the GAA in particular, but other sporting organizations have gotten much, much better at dealing with that. You know, they're not the same excesses maybe as they were, but it still comes out. And I would say that's, yeah, trapped trauma, failed ambitions, parents who are too heavy on their kids when they're young, seeking them to make it because they didn't make it. I don't know. There's a whole myriad of different things that comes up in it. But what I find is that primarily disconnects the person playing from the joy of playing. And the biggest thing for me is try and connect people to that, the joy of playing the game. That's what it's all about. Like we were when we were children, and we didn't care where we were going, and we didn't care when it ended. We wanted to find a winner, but we wanted to just be in the joy of it, you know?
Yeah. Tell us a bit about the film that you and Siobhan, your partner, are appearing in. This has been a debut, I think, in Galway.
It is. It's in the Galway Film Flat, Sean. There's a little small feature of the hurling. Siobhan did a 10-day pilgrimage from Cashel, the Rock of Cashel, down to Ardmore in Waterford. And that was the lion's share of it. Mika and Van Mechlin and Mick Holly were filming, but they were also carrying children. They were also cooking food. They were right with us in it. And the lovely thing about that is, and that was definitely my intention, and I think Siobhan's from the start as well, is that it wouldn't be something that was, oh, can you come here and we'll shoot that again, or can you say that again to the camera? We were just saying to him at the start, look, if you record our lives in this year that you have us, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to include, wherever you want to get it and however you want to get it, that's up to you. For us, we just want to be ourselves. We don't want to put something forward that's not accurate or an accurate portrayal of who we are, what we're trying to do. And so that's a recording of that, the 10 days of the walk. There's a couple of festivals in there. We started it at Samhain up on the Hill of Ward, known as Clachta. We lit the fire up there on the first year, and we lit it on the second year as well. And it's kind of everything in between that year. So it's not, if you're the TikTok generation, Sean, it's not going to be particularly appealing to them. There's slow resting shots. It's color, it's sound, it's the senses, and it's, you're letting go a little bit of, oh, I need a narrative. I need there to be an opening and a closing. It all needs to wrap up in a nice little box. That's not life. And we didn't want to do that, you know. Mm.
And the journey that you took, would it be fair to say the underlying narrative here is about trying to reclaim something about Irish culture that perhaps we've lost?
Yeah, I would say maybe a dormancy to it for sure. Mm. And that is ever present. And I suppose that was the great benefit of going out on the walk, you know, on the pilgrimage, is because you go down, like there's a few different speeds we can go at. You go at car speed and you don't really pick up very much of what's happening around you at all. You go at bike speed, you start to notice much more. You go at a walking speed, your genie max, it feels like it takes half the day. Pilgrimage rhythm is a different rhythm entirely. You start, so much more starts to line up with the world around you. And so the women were walking, they would have been carrying children with them, and the men and the supporters, I suppose, were kind of going from place to place, talking to farmers, talking to people, seeing was there somewhere we could set up camp for the night. And sometimes that was organized in advance, sometimes it wasn't, sometimes we'd stay out in the forest. It didn't, you know, we weren't too attached to the perfection of it. It's the glorious imperfection of just being out in the Irish countryside and getting chatting to lovely farmers and lovely people who said, Jeannie, we'd only love if you'd come and stay in our field, because they felt that it was a blessing to come and stay in their field, you know. And it used to be a thing that people would do far more often anyway, was to go on pilgrimages across the country. And so the women were, they were praying along the way. There's an element definitely for Siobhan of a reclamation of what prayer is. And so it might be, you know, the cows and the walks that they have to do every day to the milking parlour, or it might be for the mountains that are desiccated and not as, maybe lacking in forestry, or the rivers that are polluted, and just really going out and making those connections with all of those aspects of our place. Mm. And allowing the fuel then inside of us to say, well, look, that's not acceptable, or maybe we need more of this, or, and that orientates how you do your work then, you know. At least that's what's guiding us anyway, Sean, and it was an absolute pleasure to do it.
Sounds absolutely lovely. Jeremy, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Jeremy Ling there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.